Welcome back. It's Tuesday and it's the second hour already. And that means Mitchell Henderson is here. Once a month he comes on Tuesday evening. And we're happy to have Mitch on board as always. Lots going on in the Ukraine war, or should I be more specific and say the U.S.-NATO war against Russia being fought over the corpse of Ukraine. At any rate, Avdiivka has finally fallen. It took a long time. Kind of like Bakhmut, didn't go down easily. And I it's amazing to me, a lot of the Ukrainian troops did survive. Many obviously surrendered. Many of them didn't and are dead. Over 1,500 dead, they say, in that last big day. So it's another chapter in this horrible waste of humankind called the Russia U.S. NATO war being fought over Ukraine. It's a bad, bad scene. Not anything to be said about it in a salutary sense, except Putin did move when he had to and prevented the Ukrainians from overrunning the entire Donbass, which they were prepared to do within a few days. Sounds like World War II and Barbarossa. All right, Mitchell, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Good to be here. Let me start
Thank
off
you.
By just addressing Avdiivka a little bit here. This was a little bit different because it was an important battle. Avdiivka was a little salient that jutted into the Donetsk area, and it's the area from which for 14 years they have been making artillery bombings onto the civilians in the
right.
Donetsk city area. So
right.
they wanted to get rid of that to protect the civilians. So that was actually sort of an important battle.
Understood.
And that's
no,
why
I agree.
Ukrainians were holding on to it tenaciously because they wanted to be able to murder innocent civilians.
You're right. Now, that's the right word, too, murder, because that's what they were doing,
yeah.
and they're still doing it. They are murdering people who live in Donbass, whether they're in Donetsk or Lugansk, it doesn't matter. They
right.
kill civilians. This insane Bolshevik Zionist communist regime running Ukraine, make no mistake about it, Zelensky's the obvious figurehead, but they're killers. They're murderers of civilians. They've proven it for 14 years. Go ahead.
Yep. So what I want to talk about tonight is the Matrix, because what I'm trying to focus on is survival and letting people know what's going on. So having your head in the right place is important to survival also. So there are just two competing realities on Earth. There is God's natural reality, which extremely few live in, because we unthinkingly acquiesce to the reality that we are born into. Almost everyone is born into the other. The Jewish constructed counterfeit reality. That's where we all live, okay?
Thank you. I've been, Mitchell, thank you. Hold
yes.
on. Thank you. Because I've been saying that for many years now. The reality for most people is that reality that is spewed into their subconscious through the media. Who owns the media?
Yes, exactly.
Who creates their
Jews.
Reality? You just said it.
Jews.
And you're 100% correct. It's a Jewish virtual reality that most people live in. Go ahead. Great job.
I just call it the Jewish constructed counterfeit reality because that is what it is.
Perfect.
And that's who's constructing it.
Perfect. Thank
so,
you for mentioning
example,
that. Yeah.
For example, even many of the most devout Christians I know strongly believe that the apocalypse and Revelation is about Christ saving Israel and the Jews from destruction at the Battle of Armageddon.
No.
Just think for a moment how totally absurd this is. The Jews tried to snuff baby Jesus in the crib. They successfully crucify him on the cross. The Jewish Madeleine Murray O'Hare successfully gets God taken out of the classroom and out of the public square in America. The Jew Mikey Weinstein successfully gets anything having to do with Christianity banned from the U.S. military bases. Jewish Marxism forces Christians to bake cakes for sodomites and forces our children to attend sodomite drag queen story hour, and we are to believe that the purpose of Christ in Revelation is to save Israel and the Jews? Hell really is an impossibility of reason, okay? It's insane.
Totally. Yeah.
In Revelation, Christ calls the Jews the synagogue of Satan and warns us against listening to them. This is simple and crystal clear. The Jews are against Christ. They are the Antichrist. Christ is not on their side. The purpose of the apocalypse is not to save Israel. It is the opposite. The apocalypse is about Christ destroying Israel and the Jews and to wake humanity up from the Jewish-constructed counterfeit reality. That is exactly why it is not a crime to speak against Christ and why our government pays to promote art like Piss Jesus and Dung Virgin Mary, yet you may not speak the truth about Israel or the Jews. Revelation means revealing, and it is about revealing the truth about the Jewish-constructed counterfeit reality. Apocalypse means to take the lid off, and it takes the lid off of the Jewish lies. Revelation is liberation from the Jews, not about elevating them in this world. The purpose of the end times is to red pill humanity. It is not the end times for humanity. It is the end time for Jews, okay? That needs to get through people's heads, mm-hmm. you know? It's not about them. Christ is not about the Jews. He's about Christians, okay?
Isn't it amazing how they've turned everything around to be about them?
Yes.
Think about it.
Inverted world.
Perverted.
You know, everything inverted. Is inverted.
Yeah. It's true. Now, that said, there are some fine human beings who identify with the Jewish faith. That's fine. But they've got to put a barrier between them and this Netanyahu Zionist bloodlust murder. They've got to separate themselves and make damn
Definitely.
Sure that no one lumps them in. People do that. They lump things together. But the I don't want to say the good Jews, but let's just say the people of the Jewish faith who are conscientious, moral people. Some people might say, well, that's an oxymoron. No, not necessarily. They've got to stand up, though, and oppose this. They have to make their voices
that's
heard.
True.
It's happening in Israel now. More and more are getting out and raising hell about this Netanyahu, this psychopath, this sick son of a bitch. And he is. He's crazy. These people are nuts.
Yep.
So anyhow, that's all I wanted to say.
So every preacher who tells you that we are not in the end times right now and supports Israel is a shill for the Antichrist. The unholy trinity of Satan is the Antichrist, the Jews, the false prophet, which is Christian Zionists, and the red dragon, the communist Chinese. Remember that the Chinese are Marxists, and Marxism is Jewish. We should be able to do the math. While Revelation states that an enormous crowd of Gentiles would survive the apocalypse, only 144,000 Jews will survive it. There are 60 million Jews on Earth, so why would saving 0.0009% of them be interpreted as the apocalypse having the main purpose of saving the Jews? There are 8 million Jews in Israel, and only 144,000 will make it through the final wars. That is only 0.018% of the Jews in Israel. How are Christians so fooled about this? Mathematically, the Jews in Israel will mostly perish. That is not saving them. It is destroying them. This is to humble the arrogant and hateful Jews, not to save and elevate them. There is no such thing as Judeo-Christian. Either you are a Christian or a Jew. These two faiths are diametrically opposed to each other. One is Christ and one is the Antichrist. That said, I know Jews that have converted to Christianity. That means they have chosen Christ and not chosen the Antichrist. They have
Correct.
Rejected the Antichrist and choose Christ. They're mm-hmm. ethnic Jews, but they're Christians. Okay.
Yeah.
Therefore, every time you wonder why world leaders do incredibly stupid things that are not in anybody's interest, it is because they are just conforming to the contradictory logic of the Jewish constructed counterfeit reality. It is a delusional narrative by its nature. This contradictory logic is what conditions us to not be able to understand our world when we are living in the Jewish constructed counterfeit reality. George Orwell called this doublethink. I noticed it right away when I was a kid. We lived in rural Montana, and I was not exposed to media whatsoever. This is back in the 50s, so there was no media. Not even TV where we lived, okay? On my very first day of school, they started out with us reciting the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. Then the very first class I had was the telling of Schiller's William Tell story, where we were told of the bravery and integrity of William Tell because he refused to bow to the king's hat on a pole and was forced to shoot an arrow at an apple placed on his son's head. This was my introduction to the state. Somehow saying the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag and bowing to the king's hat were not the same thing. Very first day of school, the Jewish constructed counterfeit reality was going to work on me, putting two contradictory thoughts in my head and not pointing out that they contradicted each other. Sort of like the Jew Mayorkas saying that our border is secure.
He said, come on, what clowns, what morons, what evil morons these people are.
Oh, yeah, evil morons. We are just supposed to uncritically believe the nonsense they tell us, regardless of the fact that it has no relationship to reality.
None.
After school started, I went to church with my family, and the preacher was telling us that cooperation was love and competition was hate. After church, we went to the park in Malta to have a church picnic. They had a pile of sawdust that they put a bunch of pennies in. The kid who got the most pennies won. The picnic was a cooperative endeavor, but the kids' games fostered competition. Within a month of first grade starting, both the church and the state lost all credibility with me. This church I'm talking about is the same church that teaches you that Christ came to spare Israel and create a new Israel and put Israel in charge of the world, okay? However, as I grew up, I was more and more exposed to TV and music. I was still dragged into the Jewish-constructed counterfeit reality because it was comprehensive and continuous. It permeates every facet of our world. Plus, everyone around me was within the matrix of the Jewish-constructed counterfeit reality. Real freedom is being free from Jewish oppression. Being awake is being free of the Jewish lies.
Well,
the purpose of the Jewish project is to impoverish us, to demoralize us, enslave and exterminate us.
Mentally, emotionally, financially. All across the board.
Right. Comprehensively. Their main targets are Christians, Muslims, and white people. Their intent is to destroy us spiritually, psychologically, morally, economically, politically, and physically. If you look at foreign and domestic policy, you can see that this is their goal. It makes sense only in that context. We engage in protracted war precisely because they are destructive of both the nation and the society. It is in lockstep with their policy of creating order out of chaos. We will be in the chaos stage until we give up all of our freedom for the illusion of security. The Jews will not rest until we are all enslaved. In the United States, they are setting people against each other on any and all possible fronts. They are pushing us towards civil war to create the chaos that will be the pretext for abolishing our very inconvenient Constitution and Bill of Rights. The divisions are between liberals and conservatives, woke Marxism and individual freedom, between black, white, and yellow, between rich and poor, between nationalists and internationalists, between LGBT sodomites and Christians. What is likely to set off a civil war? Elections. We may be in a civil war by this coming November. What if Trump wins? Antifa and BLM will burn our nation down. What if Biden wins? Everyone will know that elections are rigged, and American nationalists and constitutionalists will have nothing to lose and everything to gain by a rebellion.
Awesome. Yep, yep.
What would be the foreign policy implications if the United States spirals into civil war? The moment of American weakness and internal distraction would be a rare opportunity for other nations to make their moves. In Europe, Russia will invade Ukraine, Serbia will invade Kosovo, and Turkey will invade Greece. In Asia, China will invade Taiwan, and North Korea will invade South Korea. In South America, Venezuela will invade Guyana. In Africa, Ethiopia will invade Eritrea. It would be a world war. It will spiral out of control, and every nation on Earth will be affected by it. So let's just look at war in Korea, because Americans, I lived in Korea for 2 years, and we don't really understand them. So I want to kind of use this to make people understand how war in Korea can come about. Okay, so let me ask, what impact do the Jews have on Korea? The United States has a very strong alliance with South Korea, and that alliance has strings attached. American, or should I say Jewish, foreign policy has been pushing South Korea to promote feminism. Feminism is the great divider in Korea, like racism is in America. You see, Korea is the most Confucian nation in the world. That means that everything is predicated upon what caste you are in. This extends to language and how you communicate between castes. For example, there is a very strict age caste based on filial piety, which emphasizes respect for your elders. You will notice that Koreans always ask you your age because it will dictate how much respect you get from them. When I was stationed in the army in Korea, I would see old men step in front of Rock Army convoys. Rock means Republic of Korea Army, but we just call it Rock Army. The convoy would stop the old man, and the old man would yell at them. They would not try to move him out of the way, ridicule him in any way. They had to wait until he was finished and let them pass. Respect is extreme in a Confucian society, and you can never allow an older person to lose face. The amount of respect you are afforded is based on age, gender, and military or social rank. It is rigid, and speaking without the appropriate amount of respect is a grave offense. This is in South Korea. You can lose friends, be alienated from your family, or be fired for violation of caste rules. They have the same thing in North Korea. This is how North Korean society can be so completely regimented. They have 41 castes in North Korea. Speaking out of caste in North Korea can result in prison or execution. It would seem like a great burden to us, but Koreans learned this from birth. Confucianism orders Korean society. When I was stationed in South Korea from 1971 to 74, Park Chung-hee was the dictator of Korea. In 1972, Park declared martial law. A few days after Park's declaration of martial law, which included the right of the Korean National Police to summarily arrest anyone and give them a year in prison without trial, and shut down all universities and colleges, a general from the 8th Army in Seoul came to Chuncheon to address us. We were all in formation on the airfield. The general went on about how we were on freedom's frontier, defending the freedom and liberty of the Korean people. Then the governor of Kangwon Province came on and read Park Chung-hee's declaration of martial law, basically suspending all freedom and liberty in South Korea. We were expected to believe in this obvious contradiction, but I saw many soldiers' eyes roll in their head when this vapid cap was being put out to us. And this was, like in Korea, they do expect you to believe things. You believe what your elders tell you. That's part of their culture. So you believe the reality that they spend for you, not what you see, but what they spend to you. You can see that it was the perfect place for a Jewish-constructed counterfeit reality. The archenemy of Park Chung-hee and the Korean people was Kim Dae-jung. Kim was a liberal welfare state Marxist. In 1971, the Korean CIA attempted to kill him, leaving him with a lifelong limp. Kim fled to Japan. In 1972, the Korean CIA kidnapped him from Japan and brought him back to Korea for execution. American liberals demanded that he not be executed. The U.S. worked towards getting a liberal government established in Korea. When Park was assassinated in 1979, they once again wanted to execute Kim as the biggest threat to Korean society. In 1982, Kim was allowed to live in exile in the United States. He worked as a professor at Harvard University. He made connections with all the cultural Marxists and woke professors at Harvard. He returned to Korea in 1985 and was elected president of South Korea in 1998. Kim Dae-jung immediately created the Ministry of Gender Equality and Family as a cabinet position so he could introduce the Korean version of critical gender theory and intersectional feminism. This was a direct attack on Korean culture. The feminist movement grew and reproduction slowed. Soon men would say that if a woman in heels tripped on the stairs and fell, no man would dare offer her assistance because if they touched her, charges of sexual harassment and battery would be certain to follow. This destroyed the traditional male chivalry that was inherent in Korean culture. Marriage rates plummeted and birth rates plummeted with it. Korean feminists hated men, and the extermination of all Korean men became part of that feminist platform in Korea. This is Korean hell, the impossibility of reason. You cannot reproduce females without males. Males got into gaming, gacha games, and they left the world behind. Do you see the parallels between Korea, what the Jews did in Korea, and what the Jews do to us here in America? They tailor it to their culture, but they do the same thing. They destroy the society, the morality, everything of it.
It's North Korea, what they always seem to end up doing. They've been doing this for thousands of years. It's nothing new.
Sure.
Same old.
North Korea saw this happening and began preparing for the eventual invasion of the South as they saw traditional society break down. Eventually, South Koreans would have a choice between Northern but Confucian Marxism or Southern woke Marxism that is not Korean in nature at all. The Jewish-constructed counterfeit reality was destroying Korean society, and the people knew it. In 2022, South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol ran on a campaign promise of abolishing the Ministry of Gender Equality and Family, precisely because it was destroying Korean culture and the population. But North Korea knows it's too late. An entire generation has grown up in the 24 years since the Jewish Feminist Project began. Homosexuality is now making inroads in South Korean society under pressure from the United States in its human rights campaign. South Korea has committed suicide at the behest of the sodomite United States of America. Can North Korea successfully invade South Korea without conventional, the conventional weapons that they now have since it's demoralized there? Yes, they can. North Korea has 3 times more soldiers, 2 times more tanks, 2 times more artillery, and 15 times more multiple rocket launchers than South Korea has. The United States has 1 infantry division there. I watched the ROK Army train in the 1970s.
It's a token.
Oh, go ahead.
It's a token. It's a token.
Yeah, it's
group.
A token. Yeah. I watched the ROK Army train in the 1970s and thought they were kick-ass. But my son was stationed there in 2013 and was less impressed with their training. The North Koreans tried to train each soldier into a Delta Force commando equivalent. They're very well trained. They're meant to, if they're cut off alone in South Korea, they're to continue the fight, okay, to destroy South Korea. North Korea cannot gain air superiority over the South, but North Korea has the densest air defense artillery in the world. We cannot gain air superiority over the North. The North Korean Navy is geared towards area denial. They have 71 submarines. It will be tough for us to resupply South Korea. While the West has configured its military to make profits for defense industry, North Korea has been practical. If they feel like they are losing, North Korea will go nuclear without hesitation. We can expect 2 EMP weapons over the continental United States. We can expect them to target Anchorage and Fairbanks, Alaska, Honolulu, Hawaii, Guam and Okinawa in the Western Pacific, Vancouver, Canada, Seattle, San Francisco, Los Angeles, especially the port of Long Beach, and San Diego on the West Coast, Las Vegas, Nevada, and Albuquerque, New Mexico, to take out our nuclear weapons stockpiles. The command and control center in Washington, D.C., financial center in New York, food center in Chicago, and energy center in Houston. North Korea understands that the situation in Japan is fragile. There are many Japanese that want to untether their defense from the United States, so North Korea is acting friendly to Japan. If the U.S. spirals into civil war, there is a chance that Japan will sit out an invasion of South Korea by the North. If not, North Korea has Tokyo with its 3 large U.S. bases at Yokota, Atsugi, and Yokosuka targeted. They also have 3 other large U.S. bases at Misawa, Iwakuni, and Sasebo targeted. On top of this, we have to consider our open borders. All of the Chinese and North Korean fifth columnists that have been entering our country for the past 3 years will wreak havoc here at home while war goes on in Asia. Iran and Russia have saboteurs already in place here also. If North Korea invades South Korea, China will invade Taiwan. The United States has a Jew-run government and a Jew-run military. There are 41 four-star generals in our military, and 16 of them are Jews. Approximately half of all of our generals and admirals are Jewish. Jews hate white people and Christians. Our black Secretary of Defense and black chairman and Joint Chiefs of Staff are there because of DEI, not merit. They hate white people, and more than half of our nation is still white people. Our enemies see this. Our enemies know what our weaknesses are. They are happy with our DEI and our critical race theory and critical gender theory.
You've said a lot of really important things. We could go back and develop half a dozen themes you've laid out there easily. I just wonder, first of all, the targeting you mentioned would be certainly on the drawing board or the computer screen for the North Koreans. Do they have the rocketry to deliver EMPs and other target materials to the spots you mentioned up and down the West Coast? Do they have enough rocketry yet? I know they're working on it. I'm wondering.
No, they have enough. They have cheated. They have enough. You have to realize when you look at their ICBMs that are going to come all the way over here. What are they?
Yeah.
10 or 12 of them. That's not
That's
many.
It. That's about it. That's right.
You got to remember what they hit Alaska, Hawaii, Guam, and Japan with can be intermediate range missiles. So.
That's right. I got it. I got you. Okay. The other thing, and we've talked about this before, you just mentioned the Chinese internal threat to America. The Chinese are here. Even before these PLA troops began racing across the border here in the last couple of years, there were already over 5 million Chinese here legally. They're mostly CCP, some PLA, many, many of them fighting age. And it wouldn't take, the tactics would be interesting. This is something you'd know about. It seems to me that the way the Chinese ought to go about trying to take this country down from within would be to turn loose thousands of 10-man teams, each with its own target, a substation, a water purification or distribution plant, all kinds of public utilities, freeways, rail systems. And these 10-man teams would be armed with RPGs. They could have certainly whatever explosive type they use. I think that that group, that 10-man teams turned loose, say a couple thousand of them coast to coast, they could bring this country to its knees in a matter of hours, if not a couple of days. Is that a stretch?
No, that's not a stretch. Just consider this. So one of the big things China is going to be worried about is logistics. Okay, that's what they want to disrupt over here is logistics, because we have to resupply. Now, they have plenty of submarines, and the Koreans have plenty of submarines to take our ships down trying to cross 7,000 miles of the Pacific Ocean. They have stuff to do that. But what the people need to do here is the shore-to-ship nexus. In other words, imagine if each team took out an overpass on an interstate system. Our interstate system is our defense transportation system.
That's right.
They could blow the bridge. How many bridges do you have to blow up to shut off the West Coast from the East Coast? Not many. And that's railroad bridges, too. Bridges are the soft spot. That's where you take them out, okay? And, they'll be doing that, you know? I mean, take a city like Memphis, Tennessee with a ring around it. Do you realize if you just blew up every bridge on the interstate around the city, you have cut that city off from the outside, okay? I mean, we're very vulnerable. We've got nothing to protect all these things. The days of the military out there protecting stuff like that is long over. It's not going to be there, okay? So we're very vulnerable. It'll be easy for them. And listen, explosives, they don't need fancy explosives. Listen, the only thing that you need to make explosive is any organic material. It can be cellulose, cotton, it can be It can be acetone. It can be glycerin. It can be anything. And, and then you simply process that with nitric acid and sulfuric acid as a catalyst, and you can make every explosive out there that you need, high explosives, okay? And no doubt they have there's lots of chemists that have come over here from China, okay? They can do this safely and efficiently, okay? And they probably have military-trained people that know how to make explosives, okay? So they can make their own. They don't even have to buy it or steal it from us. They can get their own. It's easier than people think it is, okay? So the most likely thing to cause the fall of the USA is the civil war that is likely to break out after the election, regardless of who gets elected.
Regardless.
America is just too polarized. It would be prudent to prepare yourself for what is coming. All of those millions of refugees that the disgusting pedophile Joe Biden has left in will run out when it breaks out. They have somewhere to go. We don't. Okay. They have a country they can go to.
Oh, exactly. Sure. Exactly right. This whole thing must be considered by all thinking Americans, and anyone anywhere can think about it, a doable, conceivable takedown. It doesn't take that many. We have 1.3 million total military, 375,000 of our military, and mostly combat, are stationed overseas in over 150 different countries. Those 375,000 need to come home yesterday. They shouldn't be out there. There's no reason for it. How are we going to stop? If the Chinese wanted to, they could create a million man and woman army here with the people already living in the U.S. who are here on a visa, and they're members of the CCP, and I think they've already been placed here. And that's not a stretch. 5.5 million.
Well,
take 20% of them. You got a million man army. Break it up into commando sabotage teams, divisions, whatever you want to do. The people are here is the point.
That's a clear and achievable objective. Now, their objective won't be to seize cities, Their objective is just to disrupt and to destroy. That will be all they need to do, okay? Do you think that if the people in this country are at civil war, do you think that they're going to take a side in that civil war? Well, I think as far as selling weapons to us, yes, maybe. But I don't think they're going to try to control it. It's to their benefit to let the civil war just rage on. They would want to fuel it, sort of like we fuel the murder in Ukraine. They would want to just fuel it. I don't think they would interfere in it because it's in their benefit to have it happen. Okay. So.
Americans have no. We have so little knowledge and wisdom about the danger we are in right now. We've never had to fight a war on our own soil, not in our lifetimes anyway. And here we are, literally, with the enemy firmly ensconced within the 48 contiguous United States. Whether they're Latinos, whether they're Africans from Nigeria, doesn't matter. They're here. The Chinese are here. If these groups were somehow brought together and coalesced, they could take this whole place down in no time at all. Even just the Chinese could do it because they're smart.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not optimistic, Mitch. I'm sorry. It's not looking good there. Not at all.
Well, neither am I. That's why I think everything will just decay into chaos and stuff.
It won't take long. I agree.
I don't think it'll take long at all. So let me talk a little bit about tracking and counter-tracking. On these nights I discuss things. I'm going to put things in people's head how to do stuff, okay? So it's good to know a little bit about tracking so you can avoid being tracked. Desperate people who did not prepare for the fall will resort to robbing those who did prepare. Basically, they will be land pirates. Trekking involves not just footprints, but the waste products of your movements. Your feces give you away. Your trash gives you away. Places where you bed down for the night gives you away. Your campfires and cooking fires give you away. Most of these things do not require any skill to detect. They're obvious. But let's start with footprints and what they tell you. One footprint directly in front of another indicates a woman. Footprints in line parallel to each other indicates a man. Footprints that angle out from the parallel lines, like a duck, indicates a trained military person or at least a military cadre that is accompanying the group, okay?
All right.
If there is a small amount of dirt kicked backwards at the heel, that indicates that it is someone walking backwards in an effort to deceive you. Okay, those are the important things to remember about footprints.
Interesting. Say that again. A little dirt at the back of the heel. Okay.
Yeah, so you have a footprint and a little dirt kicked up at the back of the heel. That indicates somebody walking backwards. Okay.
I understand. I get the vision. Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean, you could just look around you. Look at the way most women walk, especially in high heels and stuff, which they're trained to walk in. It's one foot in front of the other, whereas men tend to not put the foot in front of each other, but each foot is parallel in a straight line, okay? Soldiers duck walk because they're in formation marching, and they don't want to hit the heels of the person in front of them. And they're usually bearing load, which a duck foot stance gives you more stability in walking. So you can compare your footprint to a strange footprint that is fresh to determine more about the person or the people you are tracking. The bigger the shoe size, the taller the person. The deeper the footprint, the heavier the person or the greater load that they are carrying. You should be able to tell how many men, women, and children are in the group that you are tracking from the footprints. Footprints are most obvious in snow and mud, but harder to gain information from because the prints will not be clear. Soft dirt and sand give clearer prints. They are less clear on packed dirt and absent on rock or hard ice. Experienced people will walk on grass, which grows back straight after a time, or through the bush. If walking through the bush, there should be bent or damaged vegetation. But this does not give you a clear information that you would get from footprints. Walking in streams helps obscure footprints, but if you cross a stream and see the water being muddied from upstream, you can tell someone is walking upstream. Also, soap suds can tell you that somebody is upstream. Washing up and trash flowing downstream indicates that someone is or has recently been upstream. Since you are out there, you can determine the time of their travel by remembering the time that it rained or snowed. These tend to obscure footprints, so you can judge the time of their passing by knowing the time of the rain or snow. So by that, if you have to travel in the snow, the best time is when it's snowing, because your footprints will be covered up, okay? Or rain, because your footprints will be washed away. All right, so after a gunfight, there may be blood trails. Frothy and foamy blood indicates a lung wound. Dark, smelly blood indicates a gut shot. Also, look at the level of the blood spore on vegetation. It will help determine what part of the body got shot. Generally, lots of bright red blood at head level indicates a head wound. Because your face is always exposed to the weather, you have lots of blood vessels there. A minor wound to the face bleeds a lot. Keep this in mind because a lot of blood at the head level does not necessarily indicate a serious wound. Blood drops on the ground can indicate the direction of travel, and this is good over rock or pavement or something. Traveling blood drops are oblong, not round. So round blood drops would be seen where they are resting, and oblong elliptical blood drops would be seen when they are moving. The oblong blood drops will have a tail. The tail points to the direction they are traveling. If they are traveling blood drops, then resting blood drops, and then less blood drops, they obviously took time to bandage some wounds when they stopped to rest. So just, logically think about these things, okay? in the process of information. Okay. So next, untrained or poorly disciplined people will leave trash and cigarette butts like breadcrumbs, indicating where they have been. When I went to the Army in 1971, most guys smoked. They taught us to filter strip our cigarette butts, to keep the filter and paper in our pocket, and just strip the tobacco out. They also had us do constant police calls to pick up cigarette butts to drive home the importance of not leaving this information behind for the enemy. There will be trash where people spend the night. The vegetation and natural detritus on the ground will be disturbed. There may be bloody bandages if someone is wounded. Just treat it like a crime scene and see what story it tells you about the people that you are tracking. Are there cigarette butts? Are there marijuana roaches? Are there empty alcohol drink containers? This can indicate that these people will be off their guard and have poor discipline, making them easier to attack. How far off the trail or away from the camp do they go to take a shit? If they are further away, it is more likely that there are both men and women in the group. Do they have toilet paper? This can indicate that they are well supplied and or are fresher to the rural environment.
Yeah.
From the food wrappers, what kind of food do they use? A good mix indicates that they will have more energy. A bad mix may indicate that they will have less strength and stamina. Foreign food wrappers or trash can tell you where they are from. Also look for dog tracks and dog feces to see if they have animals with them that will alert them to your presence. Pack animals such as horses, donkeys, or mules means they have good logistics. These animals will leave tracks and dung. Camp and cooking fires can indicate how recently they were at the camp. Pay attention to your own fires in order to determine how long it takes for a fire to burn out in your environment. Different wood burns differently. Okay, so counter-tracking consists of doing what you can do to avoid leaving information, obscuring that information, or outright deception by leaving false information. Walk in areas that do not leave clear tracks. If you walk through the bush, try not to break branches. Don't leave trash behind. Dig cat holes to poop in and cover it up. Bury your trash, and before you leave, make your camp area look natural again. It only takes a few minutes. I did it all the time. It doesn't take long. Mm-hmm. Bury camp and cooking fires. Burn trash in your campfire. Build fires in a hole that you dig. This will also help with light discipline.
So you should not leave. Excuse me, Mitch.
Yes.
You should not.
Yes.
You should not leave any evidence that you were camping anywhere if you can help it. Clean it up.
Right.
Erase it. Okay.
Right.
Got it. Just wanted to underscore that.
Build fires in a hole that you dig. This will also help with light discipline. Simply do not leave any traces of information about yourself or your group. Obscure information by cleaning up where you have been and making it look natural again. Also, you can wear old socks over your boots, and it will obscure details. Your tracks will not be clear and neat, so precise measurements cannot be made. Conversely, you can leave deceptive tracks and information for your enemies to misinterpret, you or your group. Make yourself look larger or smaller, stronger or weaker than you actually are. If you want to look weaker, if you want to lure your pursuers into an ambush, if you look weak, they will underestimate you and be lulled into complacency. You do this by obscuring the number of people leaving footprints, avoiding leaving footprints made by military-experienced people, and increasing the number of female footprints. Leave trash behind that indicates lots of women, children, and sick and wounded. Leave toys, baby food bottles, lipstick, feminine products, bandages, empty medication bottles, booze bottles, and marijuana roaches behind. Be messy to show a lack of discipline. This will build the pursuer's arrogance and complacency as they underestimate you. They are ready to be ambushed. However, do not fall for this yourself. Always overestimate your opponent and prepare based on that overestimation. To look stronger, amplify your strength and capability. For example, if you walk in terrain that does not leave tracks and come to a strip of land that does carry tracks, walk across it many times to make it look like you have more people. Leave evidence behind that you have heavy weapons that you do not have. Just use your imagination and be creative. These have all been passive counter-tracking methods. Active counter-tracking methods include counter-counter tracking teams, snipers, and ambushes. These are rear guard detachments. A counter-tracking team is a good idea if you're a large group. This team lags far behind and follows you to come up behind anybody that may be following you. In the jungle, we used to do this, okay? For smaller groups, leave a sniper or two behind to see if anyone is following you and take them out. Or just set up a hasty ambush along the trail that you are making. Do this at rest, and if anyone is following you, you can just bring the ambush upon them. Okay, be careful when you are pursuing someone that you do not fall for any of this yourself. Okay, so.
Well said. I just had a nice note that Mitch is on fire. Indeed. Laying it out like nobody else does. These ought to be somehow, if somebody could help you do it, memorialized and put into just like an essay format each visit, because they really are like a book, chapters in a book. They're very important doses of reality. And you just won't find this anywhere else. Not like that. So well done, my friend.
Well, you're very welcome. I want me and my people to survive, you know?
I know. Yes, we do. One note, if I might, about North Korea and South Korea. Most people who've studied it at all understand the underground tunnel aspect of the war, if it were to come. The North Koreans, I don't know how many tunnels they have. The South, I'm sure, feels they could handle the tunnels and demolish them, blow them up, whatever. I don't think so. I think there's things going on here that even the South Koreans don't know. They've got espionage everywhere, but I think the North would have a fairly good chance of certainly taking Seoul. I don't know about the whole country, but they could take a big chunk of it. What are your thoughts?
Well, let me tell you, they've had in place, even when I was there in 1971, 72, 73, they had their field artillery trained on Seoul. They can take out the northern half of Seoul with just with artillery alone. So Seoul's gone on day one. Seoul's gone.
Understood.
So
that's what I've
read. You cannot intercept artillery shells, okay?
No.
That's not going to happen. And they have those dug in to cliff sides and stuff.
They have 6,000 pieces of artillery tubes in that long face of land. Many of them are in tunnels. They roll them out, shoot them, roll them back in, whatever. How are you going to knock those out? It's going to take days.
You got to remember that North Korea saw that it would be very expensive to try to get air superiority over the United States. So what they did is they made the most dense air defense area on Earth. There's no place with as much air defense as North Korea has. So they're not going to get air superiority over the South, but we're not going to get it over the North either. So, I mean, they think about this. This is their purpose of life. It's not ours. Ours is to sex, drugs, and rock and roll, you know. That's our purpose in life. That's not what they do, though. They train each soldier to be a commando. And when he gets into the South, if he gets detached from his unit, he's to continue on by killing, destroying everything he can. And he's well-trained to do that. Okay. And we think, well, it's just logical that they'd want to come over to us and do the sex, drug, and rock and roll thing. But in view of what I just told you about the Confucian culture, they are totally with Kim. They respect him. They love him.
Yeah. Okay. I've seen people crying over the guy. I mean, come on, you know, that's kind of like what happened in the 1930s when that man came along and saved Germany from the communists. They used to weep when he'd come by on these parade routes. No joke. The most loved man in the world at that time. And according to the other side, the most hated. No, the people in Germany loved him. He gave them back their life, their culture, their country, their history. What happened there was a miracle.
He is the most evil man on earth. when listen, I mean, they say they credit him with 12 million people that he killed. Okay, 6 million of those being Jews, but they don't seem to care about the other 6 million people, whatever they were. Okay, but then Stalin's, you know, the Bolsheviks, 60 million. Mao Zedong, 138 million human lives. And those guys are not bad guys.
No,
but Hitler is a
not.
Bad guy.
No, I know.
So that should wake people up to this false narrative we have been fed our entire lives.
Here's another part of it, Mitch. Key. They didn't stop, the Western Zionist elite, did not stop massacring and killing Germans when hostilities ceased in April of 1945. They kept right on killing Germans, the most nationalist of the German people, until 1953. And it's millions of people died after the war was allegedly over.
30 million. I had an uncle that was there in the military police that saw that with his own eyes.
Wow.
See, this is the thing. See, I'm old enough where I remember it was my dad, my uncles that went and fought this war. And these people told me that the bad guy was Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Okay? He did it for the Jewish bankers.
Oh, he and his communist government, you bet.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, they
General Patton
that, but that's been wiped out of the people's consciousness now.
General Patton knew. And if you want to read something fascinating, read General Patton's letters to his wife. You can find them, at least you used to be able to. His real views and real feelings about the end of the war. Fascinating. And they murdered him for it. No doubt.
Yeah.
Mitchell, thank you, Mitch. Great job, as
You're
always.
Very
really,
welcome.
And that's extraordinary what you've just done. All right, we'll talk to you next week. You be safe and take good care. All righty, and we'll be right back with another hour for you next.